Thanks, Dave. And thanks to everyone here for gathering today and those on Zoom for joining virtually. So like Dave said, I grew up down the hill. You might have seen me running home through the field or walking down the hill when I was little. And so now I'm an environmental science major at EMU my senior year. So next year I have to do some of that deciding that Dave was talking about. So still working on that. And so also like Dave said, this summer I did what was called the Climate Ride. And so a group of us from kind of all around the country, largely from EMU Goshen areas, but some from as far as Kansas, California, and Canada, all joined together to ride from Seattle, Washington, and then ending up in DC, 14 states and about 300 hours of biking later. So my job over the summer and over the past spring was to kind of help to set up the events and things that we did along the ride. So kind of the goal of our ride this summer was kind of multifaceted, and it was to both kind of connect communities across the country, raise awareness for issues of climate change and injustice, and then to ourselves also learn about climate issues and what hurts people, to then become ambassadors ourselves. And as of now, then we're all kind of spread across the country a little bit, but then here in a few years, then we'll be dispersed even further after we graduate. And so I'm gonna go ahead and give a little plug for CSCS. That was, again, my job was to set up the events. So at all of our church gatherings, and I would be the one to go up and give the CSCS spiel. So they're a partnership organization created from Eastern Mennonite University, Goshen College, and MCC. And they're kind of built on the foundation that climate activism is the moral equivalent to peace building. And to me, that's one of those things that I've seen like on bumper stickers and things. And I see it and I think, you know, yeah, I like peace building and I like climate advocacy, so this makes sense. But I didn't quite understand exactly what that really meant. I just kind of accepted it for what it was. So I'll get to that a little bit more later on. So if any of you all joined in this summer, there were like some public events online. So we had a couple major events, and those would have been in like Seattle, South Dakota, Lincoln, Goshen, and DC. And those were more town hall style events where we often had a panel of people and they were responding to questions and such. So of course, there was a lot of discussion and talking about climate issues this summer, but a big part of the ride was also like the adventure. I love adventure, and biking across the country was certainly a good way to fill that spot in my summer. So I saw lots of beautiful places, camped in a lot of places that ranked anywhere on the comfort spectrum from highly uncomfortable to luxurious. So lots of different experiences with that as well. And then, of course, met a lot of interesting people. Some were bikers, some were people who were staying at our campsites, people at churches, especially in the eastern half of the country. Then we did a lot of intentional conversations and meeting up with people at churches because, as you might know, in the west, then there's just fewer Mennonites along the path from Montana and Wyoming. So once you get into Ohio and Indiana and Virginia, then there's a lot more Mennonites. And I think biking at some point, especially like near the end, when we were all pretty comfortable with each other and we were all getting a lot stronger on the bike, then biking sometimes became almost secondary. And, you know, like each day, then I think the main thing that we all took away was the conversation during the day. Because we would usually break up into smaller groups and then bike together with a different group each day. This might be based around like the genre of music that we wanted to listen to, or a discussion question to talk about as a group during the day, or something else. But it was really just kind of about having those conversations during the day from whatever, like 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. during our time biking. So I wrote near the end of our time this summer a reflection post on the CSCS website that some of you might have read. I'm just gonna kind of flesh some of those ideas out a little bit more here in detail. So there were two quotes this summer that really helped to guide some of my interpretation of what I was observing. The first one is by Aldo Leopold, a pretty well-known naturalist from the middle of the 20th century. He's more controversial now for a number of reasons, but here's one of his quotes that he wrote in the Sand County Almanac in 1949. "The penalty of an ecological education is that one lives alone in a world of wounds." So that connects with me a little bit in the fact that that's my education, ecology, natural sciences. And then that's kind of countered a little bit by a quote from Robin Wall Kimmer. I was reading her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, this past semester for a different class. And then we had just been talking about Aldo Leopold in a different class. And this quote stood out to me for having some similar meaning, but also just some similar vocabulary as well. "Even a wounded world is feeding us. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. I choose joy over despair, not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily and I must return the gift." So I think these two quotes work really well together. And I personally think that the quote from Robin Wall Kimmer is a little bit more important as to how we should go about interpreting the landscape around us. And I should have mentioned, so Robin Wall Kimmer, she's a Potawatomi author, botanist, and she's a wonderful writer. So I would highly recommend Braiding Sweetgrass if you haven't read that already. And I think that these kind of similar vocabulary between the two quotes, to my knowledge, she wasn't trying to directly reference Leopold's quote when she wrote that. But that kind of common terminology of the word wounds, and even like referencing her head in the sand, and Leopold's quote was in the Sand County Almanac. That's what kind of connected it for me. But she also just so directly refutes what he's saying about wounds, while also kind of acknowledging the truth in that statement as well, that, you know, we're humans and we're hurting the earth in what we're doing, but let's not let that bog us down. Let's still find joy in what we can. And so again, these kind of really helped me to interpret my surroundings this summer. So moving on a bicycle, you're kind of moving through the landscape slowly, and I think interpreting everything a little bit more intimately, because if there's a hill, you feel the hill. Gravel, you feel the gravel. Soft ground, you feel that. So I think that that helped to connect me a little bit more with my surroundings. And that also helped me to be able to really, I think, see the wounds and see those joys more closely than I would have if I was driving or flying across the country. In the scripture verse, there's these feelings of anger and of weeping. So seeing these wounds, wounds to the earth, wounds to people, for a lot of us, those caused anger. They caused weeping, frustration, confusion, critique. And so we had to learn how to hold these and hold these two things together with how do we hold this pain while still accepting the beauty. I think that one of these instances that people really connected with a lot was we talked to a man in Wyoming who was Northern Cheyenne, and he was doing some work at our campsite, so we invited him and his brother to come have dinner with us, and then we ended up talking with them for several hours that night. And he spoke a lot about the struggle that he felt with Christianity and how he felt that Christianity was kind of the network through which a lot of his traditions had been stripped away. And the damage that he had been kind of forced to be pushed aside and watch happen to his homelands. And that was really hard for him to talk about, and that was hard for us to hear. Other examples of wounds that we noticed. There was logging in lots of mountaintops. Mining that was like huge, huge holes in the ground that just seemed to like take everything away. Towns that were burned to rubble from wildfire, and a lot of cropland in the Midwest that was flooded, or the fields were eroded and gouged out beyond use. And it's also challenging for me because these are wounds that I, along with the rest of us, contribute to and we benefit from. They're part of the system that we've kind of accepted, and that's the life that we live now. But despite the wounds that we saw, there's also a lot of reason to have hope. I saw a lot of creative ways of people responding to these wounds, and each person kind of has their own approach that they use the context around them to build upon. And so I think there's not one particular way to address these environmental ailments, because the issue is so broad that we can't just address it one way. If it's a small problem, then you can attack it from one direction, and generally that's a good way to fix it. But climate change is this kind of wide, all-encompassing issue that we learned it's just almost impossible to put any like one fix on top of that. And so this means people have to work innovatively, they have to take risks, be open to change, communicate effectively. These are all things that are really hard, right? And so it's not like there's one way of doing that. But so some of the different ways that we saw people addressing climate change issues were urban farming. Clay Hartman in Goshen, Indiana, wrote a book called Lean Farm, and he has this small-scale farm in the city limits that he brings food to the farmers market and CSAs and other people in the community. Forest farming, creating a system that kind of supports itself and grows food from means that aren't quite as destructive. And we saw that at the Geyer Farm in Iowa, near Iowa City. And then planting trees. So right across the road from Ben Hartman's farm, Clay Bottom Farms in Goshen, Steve Thomas lives, and he has a center called the Pathways Retreat Center. And he's the director of the Mennonite Men organization that kind of has networks across the country. And his goal is to plant 1 million trees this decade. And he's using his Mennonite Men network to go about that. So then we even stayed with a family in Holmes County, Ohio, where this guy had planted several thousand trees and registered them with this network. Advocacy work. So we worked with, we heard from an organization in Montana called Climate Smart, and their goal was to connect smaller, like green organizations that each have their own agendas and combine them on larger advocacy issues. And then, of course, CSCS does a lot of that same stuff as well. Managing fires, that was a big conversation in the West, especially in Yellowstone, in places where there's a lot of tourism and people live. And expanding indigenous rights. We heard a fact kind of popped out a couple times over the course of the summer that over 80% of the world's land area is protected by only a handful of the population, and those are the indigenous folks. So I think the key there is to empower people who are working like most directly with the land and who have been like historically marginalized in order to help most effectively address those issues. I think that we often have, at least I typically have, this idea of what it looks like to be an environmentalist and to combat climate change. But I think, whereas I still find myself in that field, I think that can often be more of a treating the symptoms rather than the disease approach. I think that you have to look a little bit deeper into what is actually kind of like the root cause behind a lot of these climate issues that we see. And I think that comes down to things like systemic oppression, racism, discrimination, inequality, disparities between groups. These are all the things that that prevent people from doing the work and from having the same access to environmentalism that other people do. This summer, then, we also read a book called The Land Is Not Empty by Sarah Augustine. She's another indigenous author, and she works with the Dismantling the Doctrine of Discovery group, which I think is a Mennonite organization. And she talked about when she was in Suriname doing some work down there, then all the indigenous folks that she met just often threw their garbage into their yard. And not by any means of like attempting to be destructive or harmful, but because that system to take away the garbage cost money. And so there's a lot of work to be done in making these systems of environmentalism accessible to everybody. And so I think that addressing these major social issues is really the way that we're going to be making progress on these on climate problems in the future. And I think MCC is an example of an organization that does a really good job with this. They address those really big social issues through like social development work and other like grassroots level activism. And this is what gives them the ability to be a big aid in actually doing climate work. And so seeing and participating in that type of work is what personally gives me joy and hope in what can sometimes feel like a somewhat depressing field to be working in. So, thanks.